That's Beppe Gambetta performing on this very show on September 26th, 2014. A tune called Acadian Dream. The Italian guitarist returns to Carbondale tonight with a show at Steve's Guitars. Well, hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nestler. Dance Impresario, and I know he would hate to be called that. Peter Gilbert is responsible for elevating the visibility of dance in Carbondale. Dance Initiative brings dancers from around the world to town for residencies and workshops, and has for quite a while now. And part of that effort is the annual Spectrum Dance Festival, which returns this weekend for the sixth time. I spoke with Peter last Tuesday about all the doings at the Launchpad this weekend. Is this the sixth?
This is number six.
Number six. Is that a lucky number for the Spectrum Dance Festival?
I don't know if it's lucky or not, but it's what it is.
Well, it's lucky for us.
Well, I hope so. we've had a wonderful time putting them on in different venues with obviously different performers each year. We do bring back some teachers occasionally to do the workshops, but... essentially, each year is its own genre of dance.
How long does it take you to put together a Spectrum Dance Festival?
We started to put this together about 16 months ago. When you're trying to schedule a dance company, it's not just our schedule and the constraints about space and you know other things that are going on. You don't want to have everything happen the same weekend. In the town of Carbondale, but you have to work out the schedule with the dance company, and this is a small company. They're five dancers and the choreographer, and her choreographer's husband is here, who's a sound engineer. I think you'll appreciate that. And so they're working on some new pieces as part of the residency that they have this week. And then they will perform at the end of the week on Saturday some of the new stuff that they're working on, plus some of their repertoire.
Stacy Pearl Dance Project.
Stacy Pearl Dance Project from Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Stacy has a wonderful background. She trained with Alvin Ailey back in New York, and she's a wonderful lady. We actually, Dance Initiative, met her about 20 months ago. She came here with a small company, and she did a workshop at the launch pad. And all those who took the workshop said, you know, Peter, you got to get her back. You know, she's a phenomenal teacher. The work that she did in the workshop was really fun. And so we started talking, and we've found a date way in the future, but it's what's here now.
Huh. So the focus for her, though, this time isn't so much teaching, is it? It's performing. It's working on a piece that's in progress.
Yeah. I don't know what state the piece was before she came. I think that it was in early stages. So she's working on that with her group, and she will teach a workshop on Saturday. And one of her company members is going to teach a workshop for adults, and then there's another one, sort of a hip hop workshop for kids that's free. So we're keeping them busy.
How about that? Pittsburgh and dance aren't necessarily two words that I would normally put together. But what do I know? Practically nothing about dance.
You know just a little less than I do. I'm not a...
Oh, you're too modest.
I'm not a historian of dance. I didn't grow up dancing. I didn't study dance when I was younger. I didn't dance even in an amateur way in school. And so this is this passion, although it was kindled in early in my life, I didn't really have anything to do with it until I moved to Carbondale and had an opportunity to take some classes, and I met some dancers and some teachers of dance. So I'm pretty new to the art of dance, and it's only in the last 5 or 6 years that I've been exploring the world of dance and meeting choreographers and watching different companies in different places. So, yeah, as I said, you know probably a little bit less than I do, but I don't know a lot.
Well, what do you look for in a dance company when you're thinking about scheduling them at the dance festival?
We look for a variety of the different genres. We want to make sure that there's diversity in what we bring here. We've brought ballet. We've brought some artists that were trained as ballet dancers, but we're putting together a show of tango. We've brought modern dancers. We've brought a real fabulous hip-hop company last year. And so we try and get different genres of dance to not just to present them to the community, but so that the people who are still interested in learning different techniques can take classes, watch them, and further their professional development or semi-professional development.
Well, is one of the things that's attractive about the Stacey Pearl Dance Project the sound engineering component?
I didn't know how accomplished Herman is his name, Stacey's husband. When she said that he was going to come because they're working on different sound for their performance, and he's putting that together. So this is a wonderful opportunity for the company to have him here for a week dedicated to the company's work as opposed to everything else he does. He's got a sound studio in Pittsburgh, and so, you know, he's got a full-time job and then does this for them. So the residency is really a wonderful opportunity for the company. Stacey Pearl's company, a little bit different than some of the groups we've had in the past for residents, resident artists, because she and her company, they do have space, so they can work in their own space. But of course, they don't have Carbondale. They don't have the Roaring Fork Valley. And it's still better for them to be away from their environment for a week where there's not a lot of distraction other than the view, which is pretty distracting for people from Pittsburgh. So they get this concentrated time together.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I imagine just like any schlub, it's useful for a dancer to get out of their rut and get into a new area with a new audience. It looks like she's bringing several of the members of her company with her, dancers.
Yes. She's got five. There's one single man and four ladies. I've always thought that was the right ratio of female to male. They're all really highly trained, beautiful movers. And she's got them for the whole week. And I haven't paid too much attention to them. I stopped by a couple of times watching them in the launch pad, and I could sit there all day just watching her create with them, interpreting her instructions. It's really a wonderful part of the process of dance for me in watching dance is to watch the creation, not just the actual performance.
What can you tell me about the piece that's in progress?
I don't know anything about it. The piece that she's worked on in the past is called Flowers, I believe. And
spelled with a Z.
That's Stacey. Stacey's with a Y, not just and two E's. But I really haven't asked. I'm kind of looking forward to being surprised. I'll probably stop in and see one of the rehearsals that's open to the public and sit there and watch for a while. But yeah, I'm trying not to be too involved.
So you're waiting like everyone else for the main performance.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. On Friday, we have a little kickoff party.
Yeah, tell
for
me
the
about
weekend.
That.
We're gonna serve some wine and have some snacks, and as people are there milling around and talking, whatever, there will be some dancers performing. And once again, I don't know what they're going to perform. We have a teacher coming from Denver, a fellow named Patrick Mueller, and he and his wife, Christine Whittle, are going to perform, and I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to perform. They're modern dancers. And then Stacy Pearl's company or some members of the company or an individual, I don't know, are going to perform. And so that's sort of during the, we call it the happy hour. And then we're going to screen, there's a short piece that's going to be some of the work that's being edited that Deborah Colley choreographed, Letter to Congress, Wild Sanity, that was performed at Sustainable Settings recently. And the film actually is of all the different places in the wilderness that the dancers performed. So that's in the editing process. So there'll be a short snippet of that. And then we're going to screen a wonderful documentary film called Mr. Gaga, which is about an Israeli choreographer and a style of dance that's kind of perpetual motion. And So it's kind of a fun evening, and we're going to charge all of $5 for that one.
Perpetual motion. What does that mean?
It means literally that if you're in a Gaga class for an hour class, you literally do not stop moving for the hour. It's not like you're practicing one step and then you stop and then repeat it. It's you're going. And so I haven't watched the film yet. I'm resisting because the only thing I did is I checked out to make sure the film works and there's no skipping in it. But I'm waiting to see it like hopefully a good number of people in town come to watch.
That's interesting to me that you allow yourself to be surprised that way. It says a lot about you, I think.
I don't know. It's kind of like you want to have – if you do as much preparation and you watch everything and you then I don't know if it's – it's as interesting the day of the event. I'm sure this is a film that I will watch again, but I kind of wanted to have it be, kind of a surprise and original for the evening.
Well, I did notice on your blurb that he is considered one of the world's foremost choreographers, this Israeli.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see how the film plays out, but it was screened originally in New York, and I'm sure it's been in lots of festivals. And we got the rights to do it. Very nice people who are distributing it, and they made sure that we didn't pay too much money for it because it is a nonprofit, and we're not charging a lot of money for the evening. Dance Initiative's mission is to charge very little for what we actually show. It's we do not want anybody to have to worry about affording the performance or workshops or whatever we do. So we subsidize as much as we possibly can.
That's admirable. Well, let's talk a little bit about the workshops before I let you go, because that's truly where the spectrum lies.
It's wild, and I told you when I came in today that I had to bring a cheat sheet with me because there's so much going on, and I'll get it all wrong if I just start to talk. On Saturday we start the morning with an African dance workshop, and there's a lady, Mecca Madyun, who is going to teach that. And we have Eric Baumheier and his group of drummers who are going to do the rhythm for that class. And we had a teacher last year, not Mecca, but another teacher. And there were some 30-odd people that came to that workshop. And it was just absolutely a wonderful, heady, fun way to start the day. Hmm. So we're doing that again. And then Stacy is going to do a modern technique class that starts at 11:15. And I took her workshop, 20 months ago. And I can still tell you that it was the most fun I've had moving in that I can remember anyway. It was just terrific. So she's doing that 11:15 for an hour and a half. And then one of her company members is going to teach a hip hop and house is a form of sort of improvisational dance. That's for sort of beginners for young age six and up. And that starts at 12:15. That's free. All kids are welcome to come. We'll find a way to squeeze them in no matter how many we get. This fellow I mentioned earlier, Patrick Mueller, who's going to perform a little piece with his wife on Friday night, is going to teach a class at he's calling modern floor technique. So it's all movement on the floor, different ways to communicate with your body, whether it's rolling around or whatever on the floor. So that's for more intermediate and advanced dancers. Then we've got aerials. The one incredible thing about the launch pad is because of the height of the ceilings, we put in these beams and we have fabric hanging, and it's been one of the more popular activities there. I just came from the launch pad a few minutes ago, and I couldn't count them all. There were like six or eight youngsters there, all working out on the fabric. So we've got a wonderful teacher coming from Denver, Mish McGlone, who is going to teach some beginner aerials in the afternoon, and then she'll teach again on Sunday morning some adult and some more youth, different intermediate level on Sunday. And then the last class of the day is an adult hip hop house dance, which should be lots of fun for all those, and it could be teenagers as well, that are, just more than 6-year-olds and 10-year-olds. So that'll be in the afternoon from 3 to 4. And then we got to kick everybody out, and I got to set up for the performance.
And then a couple workshops Sunday morning.
Yeah, Sunday the aerial, because the space, you need all the space for the aerial workshops. You can't really do much else in there. Misha is going to teach an adult workshop in the morning at 10 for an hour and a half, and then a youth workshop at 11:45 for an hour. And that's about it. I'm exhausted thinking about it.
I know, and I'm exhausted hearing it. But it sounds very interesting and quite diverse.
It is diverse. And so we get some people who probably would never think about dancing, and they come in and they can actually have fun.
Peter Gilbert of Dance Initiative, thank you for coming by and telling us all about the 6th Spectrum Dance Festival.
Thank you, Luke.
That happy hour event begins in 1 hour and 39 minutes, and you heard Peter say it's only $5. You can get more information at danceinitiative.org. Stay with us. Film Fest up next on today's Express Yourself.
He didn't give you that nickname, but you smile when he calls you, you know the game. He turns the lights down low for your migraines and fetches what you strew all around your room, up and down the hall, asking for your sodium pentothal so that you can read aloud from your big tell-all anecdotes and platitudes. This world's mean, getting in a two, so why you have to make it all about you? There's no harm in stepping to the side. like the rest, out of sight and out of mind. Show tunes, the feelings come quick, but they leave as soon, like music from a passing car. It's crowded in the club where you meet your friends, trying to save some room for the elephant. Every day's a chore and you're not done yet, you didn't think it'd be this hard. The run's begun, we're a nervous crew, so why are you trying to make it all about you? So bad, it's just a flash of light. Light your hurricane lamp when the sky goes dark. The rain's upset, it just falls apart. You get your wish, it's just a matter of time. Till you vanish like the rest, out of sight and out of mind. Until you vanish like the rest, out of sight.
Whoa, that was Conor Oberst, a tune called Enola Gay from his 2014 CD, Upside Down Mountain. Conor brings his band to the Belly Up tomorrow night, and tickets are $40. Well, Susan Rubel is literally brand new in her job as the executive director of Aspen Film. I spoke with her yesterday on her sixth day on the job about the 39th Film Fest, which comes to Carbondale next weekend and starts in Aspen on Tuesday. You're new to Aspen Film, so let's
I am very new. Three weeks old. Not even.
How about that? Wow.
How about that? Huh. And of those 3 weeks, I've been in Aspen 5 days of them.
Wow. So you're hitting the ground running. How about that?
Oh, yeah. But it's great. You know, when I first walked into the office, I sort of got the, like, you know, and I said, it's okay. I'm used to dealing in triage situations. I've worked for, you know, Miami International Film Festival was the same, IFP in New York Independent Feature Project. All good. That's how I work best.
Well, Susan Rubel, your resume is deep and wide, and it spans the globe, and you have experience in film acquisition and sales, development, production, marketing, distribution, just about every facet of film. What made you want to take the executive directorship of Aspen Film?
Well, I feel like this is an opportunity, and as I've said, timing in life is everything, and the timing of this was absolute kismet, so to speak. Basically, the executive director role for me really gives me a platform to sort of use all the tools in my toolbox. You know, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's what I've been working towards, but because I've had a deep and varied career over the past 20-some years, I've dabbled in a lot of different things, and it's been exciting and it's been great, and I've been a consultant, and this opportunity really allows me to sort of play to my strengths and bring the best of what I've learned to an organization that really seems to have a community behind it that works really well with my background. You know, I spent almost 7 years in New York. I spent almost 7 years in Los Angeles. I was in New York in film for 11 years before that, and I've been back in New York for another 7. And although I love it, I just sort of feel like the business is migrating to Los Angeles a lot more. Even a lot of the companies that are left in New York are setting up Los Angeles outposts. And although I enjoy Los Angeles, it's not a place that I wanted to relocate back to. So when this came up, it was sort of a refreshing new option. I feel the community there is super sophisticated, really engaged. They have an appetite for art and culture and cinema. You know, I sort of love the healthy lifestyle plus the whole sports angle. And it's really a community that, from my vantage point, seems to have something to offer for everyone. And I have a close group of college friends, many of whom spend time in Aspen. Some of them own homes. So it's not like I'm you know, dropping into some place in the middle of Iowa where I don't know anybody. It's actually a community where people that I know and adore frequent. So I feel like it's going to be a nice community. And everything I know about the people there and just the time that I've spent there seems like it's going to be a good fit.
Well, if you're so new on the job, I guess you didn't program much of this festival.
No, we have a programmer whose name is Jane Shuttle. She comes from Toronto.
Okay, so she has extensive experience, too, in that regard.
She definitely does, and she and I, it's funny, Jane and I had not met in person. We still haven't met in person, but we've been on the phone a lot since I started. We really come from a similar world and a similar background and have a lot of friends in common. So, you know, sort of taking up the reins and having somebody like Jane on board who did this unbelievable job programming and us looking down the road for Academy screenings and talking about that together, it's just really nice to know that there's, you know, there's somebody in place that gets it and that sort of comes from the same world and mentality that I do.
Well, as usual, you have some Carbondale films showing.
I know. We're very excited about that.
Not this weekend, but next. And yeah. So let's focus on that just a little bit. There's a lot of things to talk about. So let's start with the Friday showing of Lucky. One critic called that a film about nothing in particular and everything important. And it features the final on-screen role of Harry Dean Stanton.
And there was just an article in one of the trade publications today saying that this should be his posthumous Oscar.
How about that?
Yeah.
That says a lot.
I have not seen the film yet. I'm super excited for it. A friend of mine who's based in Boulder is a producer on the film. So I've been very excited for this one. I unfortunately had missed it when it was at Sundance, but that's one that I'm very keen to see.
Yeah, well, I really love the blurb description. A 90-year-old atheist who has outlived and outsmoked all of his contemporaries. That's pretty good. And
pretty
I could see Harry Dean Stanton filling that to a T with that craggy face and that kind of offhand, how would you put it, profundity. There's something something profound about the guy.
We say he's got some gravitas.
Yes. Yes, a dusty
gravitas. And a gravelly voice to boot.
Exactly. Well, one critic called it his best role since Paris, Texas. So that says a lot right there.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotten a lot of accolades, so I'm very excited about that one. I'm thrilled that that it's going to be playing in Carbondale as well.
And then the other Friday movie in Carbondale, The Desert Bride, which seems like a rather quiet but probably transformative kind of movie. Tell me about
Absolutely.
The Desert Bride.
And this director really has a track record. I believe the lead actress was in Gloria, and that film was nominated for an Academy Award that year.
I watched the trailer for it, and it looks like it might be a meditation on, shall we say, mature love?
Yes, I believe that is correct. But Paulina Garcia was the lead in Gloria, and it was, that was, I can't remember if it was Chile or Argentina's Oscar entry the year that Gloria came out.
Well,
so I'm very excited to see this. The director's phenomenal.
Yeah, very amusing trailer.
And one of the things that I think is so great, this is one of our, this may be our only Spanish language film. So I think for, I know that there's a big Spanish-speaking community within the area, so we've been doing a big push with this for schools and for teachers for educational purposes as well.
Okay.
For more mature kids.
So is it subtitled? Okay.
All of our foreign language films are subtitled.
Right. Okay. And then Saturday, you have a couple of really interesting offerings, one of which looks very intriguing to me, and that's The Florida Project, which I have to say is, I would say that's sort of unfortunately named. It sounds like a dreary documentary.
It does sound like a dreary documentary. It is anything but dreary.
Yes.
And it's interesting because it's not a documentary, but you almost get the sense that you are watching real life unfold in front of your eyes. I saw it on Friday morning. It really, really stayed with me. It's gorgeous to look at. The colors are bright, and it's about, you know, these families that live in these motels in Orlando, kind of on the outskirts of Disneyland. And much of the film is told from the perspective of a six-year-old girl.
Well, speaking of that six-year-old girl, there's a star in the making right there. Just I only have seen the trailer.
Yeah, she's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
Actually, everybody is. And the woman who plays her mom in the film is going to have a huge career.
Oh, interesting. And she was discovered on social media, I understand.
That does not surprise me.
Well, I watched a really nice interview with the director, who is Sean Baker, and and Willem Dafoe, and also that young girl and the woman you're talking about. And it just, one Variety magazine called it a loving look at the innocence of childhood. So it's sort of a coming of age kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a coming of age. It's really interesting because it's a lot of it, as I said, is told from the perspective of the little girl and her friends, and that they're who we first meet when the film opens, and then we get to meet her mom, and you see a lot about their relationship and how Willem Dafoe interacts with them. It's really kind of fascinating, and this was also one that was a huge buzz film out of Cannes.
Yes. Yes.
It premiered in the director's fortnight and got snapped up immediately. I think there's a little bit of a bidding war for it, from my understanding.
How about that? Well, you know, it looks very promising. And
Sure. I think that you're going to hear a lot of buzz on this movie into the awards season.
And it's destined for a wider theatrical release, isn't it?
I believe so. I mean, A24 is taking it out, and they do a phenomenal job.
Oh, okay. And the other Saturday offering at the Crystal Theater in Carbondale is All the Wild Horses, about the Mongol Derby. What is the Mongol Derby?
So apparently it's the biggest horse race in the world. Basically, you have all these Mongolian riders. This is another one that I've been waiting to see for the festival, unless I can somehow sneak a screener in before the festival starts. It is basically the biggest horse race in the world of anywhere. Like one of these, I'm losing my words. Like a paleo race, sort of.
Oh, okay.
That you would see in Italy or something like that. It's supposedly phenomenal, and you know, I know that because the area is very keen on horses. I think that was part of the idea, but it's also been, I don't think it's actually been seen very widely, which is why Jane was very excited to bring it to the community.
Well, it features a race of 1,000 kilometers across the steppes of Mongolia, so I'll bet the scenery
it's
is
going to be absolutely
great.
Gorgeous. One of the first movies that I released in my career was called A Mongolian Tale, that took place across the steppes of Mongolia, and it was absolutely arresting.
Huh. How about that? So that looks promising.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, a couple of interesting flicks. I guess you would call it a documentary. Letters from Baghdad.
Letters from Baghdad. Yeah, it's a found footage documentary about a phenomenal woman named Gertrude Bell, who was very much involved in sort of the shaping of the Middle East.
Yeah, she was considered the female Lawrence of Arabia, I guess.
Exactly. She's a pretty outstanding-sounding character. She's one of these women, sort of like a Hedy Lamarr, whose film Bombshell we're also showing, is one of these women that just sort of went under the radar in terms of all of the accomplishments that they brought to the world.
Yeah.
So it's, a husband and wife couple who directed the film. They will be in town.
Oh.
The film is just supposed to be phenomenal, and there's this never-seen-before footage of Gertrude that sort of talks about her whole trajectory and how she worked with, I think it was the British government, and, you know, really helped shape the Middle East.
Yeah, drawing the borders of Iraq, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the film features Tilda Swinton as a voice.
She's a narrator. And apparently Tilda Swinton looks a lot like Gertrude Bell did.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
But she's not actually on screen. She's just voicing.
No. She's narrating.
Okay. Yeah. That looks like an interesting one. And
I'm very, very excited about.
And then the last one on Sunday, it's at Crystal Theater, The Upside.
The director is Neil Berger, who did The Illusionist, he did Limitless, he did Divergent. He's a very talented director. And this is Nicole Kidman and Bryan Cranston, and also a phenomenal actress called Shifta Farahani.
And Kevin Hart.
Hart's in the film, Juliana Margulies. It's got a great cast.
does have a great cast, and yeah. It looks like a very promising story, heartwarming.
Oh, this is the English language remake of the French film The Untouchables.
Okay.
Did it win the Oscar? Or it was just nominated for a French Oscar several years ago. I think it won the Césars.
Oh, okay. And it's based on a true story about a billionaire who becomes paralyzed and ex-con, played by Kevin Hart, who signs up as his caretaker.
Exactly.
Caregiver.
Exactly.
Let's talk about a few of the other films that are showing in Aspen, because they also look very interesting. You mentioned the Hedy Lamarr flick. I had no idea. I mean, everybody knows her as a sex bot, but nobody knows her as an inventor.
No, and the film is pretty incredible, because when you see what this woman actually did, you know, using sort of Morse code and looking at player piano rolls and figuring out how to send messages. I mean, she basically created modern-day Wi-Fi.
Interesting. Back in the 40s.
I mean, she was fascinating.
In the 40s, like long ago.
Exactly. I mean, she was a brilliant woman. So it's pretty incredible. And we're doing a special panel just on Hedy Lamarr and Bombshell in Aspen on Saturday with the producer of the film.
Oh,
so that should be a great event, because Jane and I were speaking to him, you know, about what we were going to cover. And Jane basically said, I'd love to do a 10,000-foot view and then have you unpack everything. And he started telling us some pretty incredible anecdotes just about having the footage, finding the footage. They'd never heard her voice before. They had started shooting, and they realized, we can't do this without hearing Hedy's voice. And then one reporter who had not gotten back to them, they tried calling him one more time, and he said, I've been waiting for this phone call. I have all of the tapes of her.
Wow.
So it was sort of through this guy who had Hedy's voice on tape that we got Bombshell.
And I understand in researching this that she has an Aspen connection. I had no idea.
She does indeed, a very strong one. She fell in love with Aspen. I mean, she grew up in Austria, so there was something about it. And she owned, I'm blanking on the name, I believe it was one of the hotels, something with Chalet.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
So she was in that crowd, that early Aspen crowd with Gary Cooper and some of the others. How about
that? I believe so.
Huh. And another one that's getting a lot of attention and will soon have a theatrical release that you are showing is Lady Bird.
Yes.
Tell me about Lady Bird.
Lady Bird is Greta Gerwig's directorial debut. Has gotten phenomenal accolades. It's funny because most of us know Greta is an actor, and apparently the reviews, she knocks us out of the park. I've only seen the trailer to date. This is one of my highly anticipated watches at the festival as well. And it looks hysterical. It's a coming-of-age story of a sort of offbeat teen and her relationship with her mother, and it just looks phenomenal.
Well, it's hard to go wrong with Saoirse Ronan.
Exactly. She's a very accomplished actor.
Yes, very much so. And then the other one that caught my eye was the New Zealand Women. Tell me a little bit about Waru.
So this is a film that's comprised of 8 different films. My understanding from Jane, who is a massive advocate of this film and just really thinks it's something special, is that 8 Maori women were given the opportunity to tell a story. 8 women directors from New Zealand construct an authentic, multi-voice story about child abuse set in the Maori community.
Ooh, that's explosive.
Yeah. Yes. So 8 women directors from New Zealand each direct 1 chapter, I stand corrected, centered around the funeral of a Maori child we never see who has apparently died from parental neglect and possibly abuse.
Well, I see that you're doing the surprise film again. That's really good to see.
Yeah.
That's always much talked about.
I can't say much more than it is one of my favorite films of the year.
Oh, okay. Nice little clue. Well, Susan Rubel, your first Film Fest, but the 39th version of it.
Very exciting.
Coming right up, and it's a real pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You as well, and hopefully we'll see you around the festival.
You'll find more information about this year's Film Fest at aspenfilm.org. Tickets are available at aspenshowtix.com, the Wheeler Box Office, and Bonfire Coffee in Carbondale for the Crystal Theater shows next weekend. One of the films screening in both Aspen and Carbondale is a documentary called All the Wild Horses. You heard Susan mention that film. It's about the longest horse race in the world, 1,000 kilometers across Mongolia on wild horses. It's based on Genghis Khan. Yes, that Genghis Khan's Pony Express, the way mail was delivered a very long time ago. But the race itself is in its ninth year. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh talked to the director, Ivo Marlowe, by phone from the UK about the film and how it's a dream come true.
My name is Ivo Marlowe, and I'm the producer and director of All the Wild Horses, which we have just brought to the Aspen Film Festival and to Carbondale.
This film is really a dream come true for you. Talk about that.
It is, yeah. I grew up on a horse farm, and I kind of learned to ride horses before I could even ride a bicycle or anything like that. So from when I was really small, I always had this dream to go to Mongolia one day, and my mom always gave me kind of books on Genghis Khan, all that. So yeah, from when I was a little boy, I was dreaming one day to be riding in Mongolia. But then, you know, stuff happened, life happened. I became a screenwriter, and that was my job. And then 4 years ago, I found out about this race, which is now only 8 years old. And I decided I needed to do this because this basically was everything that I always dreamed of as a kid. So I applied to ride the race. That was my whole idea. I just wanted to ride it and hopefully win it. And then the amount of trouble you have to go through to actually get accepted in the race kind of makes it quite clear that this once-in-a-lifetime thing, you're not going to probably ever do that again. And so when I got to that stage and they accepted me, so you get tested as a rider and you have to be good enough to ride those horses and all that stuff. So once I got accepted, I thought I need to somehow actually film this because this is my background, this is my day job. And so I started small. I just wanted to kind of maybe record it for myself. And then I thought that'll be boring, basically. And so I kind of became a filmmaker again. I thought, okay, I'm going to try and raise funding to bring a crew over, just a small crew, and so we can film the whole thing. And I'll still ride it, but I'll ride it with the camera, and we'll have another crew filming the rest, and then we'll put it together like that.
It actually took you two trips to the Derby to complete the film.
Yeah,
that's right. Did you ride in both races?
I did, yeah. So I rode the first time, and consciously, obviously, I did sort of compete, but not really, because I was on the job. So I was with camera, with sound recording equipment, and I was always kind of staying with groups and, you know, not necessarily with the fastest ones, because I was staying with the people that I thought would be interesting as characters. And so I did that and kind of finished the race like that. And the crew that I brought over, they filmed the other stories. But then when we finally got together in the end, after 7 days, we hadn't really talked because you can't, there's no network for cell reception or anything. So when we finally got talking, we kind of compared notes and stories, and we realized that probably not all of it will work out because a lot of the stories just kind of, they just disappear. People just kind of fall flat because once the race starts, after like kind of day two, the field of riders spreads out so far that it's impossible to track them. They're like 100-150 miles apart in the end. And so then what happened, I went into the edit for the film and spent a couple of months or something, and then realized that, yeah, that a lot of the good stories just didn't quite finish or work out. And so that means kind of you don't really have a proper film. And so then I found out about other people riding the next year, and one of them was this black horse whisperer from South Africa.
That's Monday.
That's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never been out of the country, never been on a plane, never been in a hotel, never been anywhere. And the amazing thing about him was that his whole community in his village, they all kind of pooled together to send him to Mongolia because they knew how good he was. And they, knew he'd have a chance of winning it. And I thought that was just an amazing story. And so I thought, yeah, that'd be worth going back to and filming him.
Right.
So I connected with him, and he was fine with that. He was fine with me riding with him and filming him. Mm-hmm. And so we both together went the next year. And again, I filmed the whole race again, just with him as the main character. Next year, edit, we kind of finished the film off after that.
Well, I wanted to talk briefly about the actual race itself. I mean, the film is about the Mongol Derby. It's a 1,000-kilometer race of international riders across Mongolia on Mongolian wild horses. And it got its start as Genghis Khan's Pony Express.
The idea is the same. So basically, you have horse stations around every 30 miles. And so every 30 miles, there's a family, a nomad family with a big herd of horses, of about 80 horses. And because they're kept fairly wild all year round, they move long distances every day. So they're really fit just by the way they're kept already. But they are very unruly and rarely ridden. So a lot of the times I think we were riding horses that maybe even ridden once or maybe twice. Yes, that came straight from this postal express that they used to have, basically. And it was also in the Genghis Khan army, basically. That's how they kind of moved very quickly across vast distances. And the Adventurers, which is a company in England, they kind of found out about it because there was a Mongolian friend of theirs, and she and her grandfather were still involved with those horse stations like 80 years ago. So they kind of decided that would be an amazing horse race to have. It'd be something completely unique that you can't put on anywhere in the world, because there's probably no other country in the world where there are enough horses to do this. I mean, I can only think of maybe somewhere in Argentina or maybe Iceland. And I think the only other thing people have thought about is to do this with Mustangs in the West, basically. But Mustangs are a lot wilder, and it's a lot harder to kind of get them into a state where you can actually ride them for 30 miles. So that's kind of how the race happens. And then the rules are, it's very strict.
We just have a few minutes left. And,
I
found it nerve-wracking that no one knew which horse or what kind of temperament their next horse would have. The riders got a completely new horse at each rest station.
Yeah. So every about 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours, you get a completely new horse. So the key really to ride this successfully is to really know about horses. You have to be a good horseman to do this. And I'm not even talking about being the most amazing endurance rider, because you can be an amazing endurance rider on your own horse because you know that and that's it. And that's a totally different thing because you are on the horses that you know. And here you need to really suss out the horses. You have a lineup of, say, 40 horses, and you need to pick one that you think will deliver you safely to the next horse station. And because if you don't, then you get backed off somewhere in the middle, and then suddenly you're there on your own, no horse, and then you have to walk for like 30 miles. Or you get injured, and then that's obviously even worse. So the key is really to pick wisely, not necessarily the fastest, but also the sanest horse. And then the second thing you do is you get the local herder to sit on the horse and ride around in a circle. And, and then if you're a good horseman, if you know about horses, you will know if that horse is sane or not. You understand that very quickly, really. And so that's the key. And then the third thing is after they get on, then you get on, and you'll see how you get on with the horse. And for me, and I think for everyone who knows horses and who's a horseman, you know every horse has a personality, and they know you have a personality, and they'll understand that. And so you can kind of click, or you don't. But even if you don't, then you know that very quickly, and then you'll decide maybe you won't take that horse after all.
It's a really fascinating film, and I'd love to talk details, but I don't want to spoil it for people. The characters in it, the people whose stories you followed are amazing. I mean, all of them are. But, you know, I wanted to just talk really quickly about my favorite scene straight up is the one with the wild Bactrian camels. That was wonderful. Can you talk a little bit about the wildlife of the Mongolian steppe?
Oh, I'm really pleased you're saying that. Basically, that scene for me was, it was kind of like, I just wanted something in there that, because we experienced that. It was just amazing. We kind of rounded the corner around the hill, and suddenly there was this big herd of camels, and they're really big. You know, they're large animals. They're bigger than the horses. And what I found really funny is that my horse that I was riding at the time was getting really freaked out by those camels. And I was talking to the horse, saying, like, you shouldn't be freaked out. I should be freaked out about this. You should know these guys. Anyway, and then we kind of got quite close to them. And, yeah, they live all over Mongolia in herds. And a lot of them are equally kind of half wild. So some of them are kept as livestock. And then, but they still live in their herds, and the herds are often kind of wild herds, really. Yeah, and but further west, not where we were there, but further west in Mongolia, they ride them a lot more too. But in that area, they actually just kind of roam free, more or less. They're also very much part of the Mongolian livestock. So they have camels, they have horses. They have goats and sheep, obviously, and then sometimes, rarely, they have cows, too. But cows are normally not hard enough to stand the climate, really, in winter.
There are wolves
and
there,
and
too.
Then, apart from that, the wildlife. So there's wolves. There's a lot of wolves. We saw quite a few, and even though in summer you rarely see them, really. But, yeah, there's wolves around, and they come quite close because they... you know, they go for the foals and they go for the sheep and stuff. We have a little story in the film about a wolf that kind of follows one of the characters around. And that was really fascinating, I thought, because we, in the end, got to film that wolf kind of hanging out. And we kind of called him kind of like a guardian angel for that rider.
Right.
Then there's bears and then there's... wild dogs and everything. So, you've got to be on your feet.
Yes. Ivo Marlowe, director and filmmaker, will be in Aspen next week to talk about his film, All the Wild Horses. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. It's a great film.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Amy.
Thanks a lot.
All the Wild Horses screens in Carbondale Sunday, October 8th at 5:30. Marlowe will be in Aspen next week. And you can find the complete Film Fest schedule at aspenfilm.org. Let's go out with a rockin' tune from the North Mississippi All-Stars, who play the Belly Up a week from tonight. Thanks for listening. Please remember to go out there and express yourself.
I've been drinking muddy water, sleeping in a hollow log. I've been drinking muddy water, sleeping in